Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Student to CEO podcast. I'm so excited to have Evan Lutz as today's guest. Evan Lutz is the CEO and co-founder of Hungry Harvest, an organization with the mission to eliminate food waste while providing access to affordable, nutritious food to those who live in food insecurity. Starting his company during his senior year at the University of Maryland, Evan and Hungry Harvest have since made a deal with Robert Herjavec on Shark Tank, built a team of up to 80 people, spread across 9 states, reduced over 20 million pounds of food from going to the landfill, and provided access to over 1.3 million pounds of produce through reduced cost markets and donations to people in need. Evan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be talking to you today.
Awesome. Well, I'd love if you could first start off by talking more about you and your story and how you came to start Hungry Harvest.
Absolutely. My entire life, I've been fascinated by this idea of social entrepreneurship. And using business as a tool to create positive change in the planet. I've always been fascinated with the environment, and I love Mother Nature and parks, and I love this planet. And I've always found it a shame that climate change, we are kind of the climate change generation, right? Climate change will have had the most impact on our generation, and we are the ones who have the most power and the most tools, technology, to actually stop it, right? So I've always been fascinated by social entrepreneurship, environment, and food. And so I studied at the University of Maryland, and where both my parents went, my aunts and uncles, my grandma even went there to school there. So I'm a legacy terp through and through. And we actually had to start a business in one of my classes called Social Entrepreneurship Fellows. And one of the ideas going around the class was a local farmer who had surplus produce, which I had no idea what that was at the time, wanted to try and sell it to college students. And so I went to his farm and saw the produce that he was going to sell to his normal retail clients. And I saw the produce that he said would quote unquote go to waste. And as an untrained consumer at the time, I really couldn't tell the difference. And I thought that might be an opportunity to get this farmer some needed income and reduce this food from going to waste, prevent this food from going to waste, and feed hungry college kids, which, fruits, vegetables are not really part of the college diet, or I thought they should be more of. So I figured a farm stand would be a perfect place to do it. So I started a little farm stand outside of my student union and sold 5-pound variety boxes for $5. I physically drove to and from the farm every single week. And at first, it was just gaining a little bit of traction. It was like 10 students a week, 10, 20 customers a week, the first couple of weeks. And some of the other students in my class were selling bracelets or doing online fundraisers. Nobody was really taking it that seriously. And I didn't really think this was going to take off that much until I started to do some more research and realized how big this issue was of food waste all across the country. And during the course of the semester, the farm stand grew in customers from 20 customers a week, making $100 in revenue and actually losing money, to 500 customers a week, making $2,500 in revenue per week, run rate of about $100,000 and profitable just by selling surplus produce, right? During this time, I started to do a little bit more research on food waste. And this is back in 2013, 2014, when food waste, ugly produce, wasn't really a big topic. And I realized that there's about 20 billion pounds of produce that go to waste every single year, as estimated by a lot of different sources. And nearly every farmer in the United States has this problem. And in the meantime, there's about 49 million food Americans that are living in food insecurity and don't have access to fresh produce. And I wondered how our food supply chain got that way. I was really just curious, more of anything else. And so I did some more research and I figured out a business model that worked where I could buy this produce for really cheap, assemble it for really cheap into variety boxes, and then deliver it for really cheap directly to customers' homes. And this was right about the time when, you know, Uber was getting big and the gig economy was really getting going. So we could use independent contractors, and Facebook's marketing tools were starting to take off. So there were a lot of tools at my disposal in 2013 or 2014 when we got started that really helped me help make this business possible. I don't think it would have been possible with the lack of knowledge and capital that I had in 2014 as say 2008 or 2006 or something like that. So really I didn't have any experience in produce. I didn't have any experience in marketing. I had $6,000 to my name from basically money that I had in my bank account since I was like 13 from my bar mitzvah. And I was really passionate about this. And so I started basically an online e-commerce, produce delivery company, selling this ugly produce from farms and delivering it directly to folks' doors. I thought it was a good way for these customers to actually, interact with this problem of food waste. You know, if you hear about the problem of food waste, you're not going to go out and go gleaning every weekend or go volunteer at the food bank every weekend, right? It's not a problem where everybody has a lot of time to contribute towards it. But if I made a product that made impact, I figured that would be, enough of a selling point for people to really attract people, right? And that's kind of how we got started. About 6 years later, so we started in 2014, May 5th. And so we just passed our sixth birthday, and we've grown to about, nine states, seven cities, 80 people, profitable, raised a little bit of money, and, proud to be saying I've made a salary, for the past 4 years or so, which, a lot of entrepreneurs don't make it to that point. And I certainly had not for the first couple of years of the company. It's been quite a journey with all that we've learned over the past 6 years and how much impact we've been able to make.
Yeah. And what an amazing story, especially with the fact that you took something that you had to do by having to create a business through your class during your senior year of college and ended up making it something that you wanted to do and enjoyed doing and then turning it into a profitable business years later.
Yeah. I had dreams of becoming an entrepreneur, like I said, since I was 10, 11, 12. But I never really knew what that would mean. Like, what do I be doing day to day? Like, how much responsibility would be on my shoulders? What kind of decisions would I be forced to be making? You don't really know until you're actually in the job, you've signed the articles of incorporation, you're day one, you have bank account, you have investors or employees or people that are actually counting on you. And I was really bad at my job when I first started out, right? As there's a really steep learning curve when you're an entrepreneur and you really don't know anything, or you're straight out of school. You kind of just have to problem solve and figure things out and be really, really persistent about how you're actually going about your day-to-day and working on building your business. And so when I actually did start the business in May 2014, it was a dream come true. I was like, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm saying, no, this is day one. And it was super exciting. But then again, the responsibilities kind of fell on my plate and I realized how big of a task this was going to be. So I think the lesson there is like, I talk to students all the time about this back at University of Maryland and kind of colleges all throughout the country I've traveled to kind of tell my story, because I can relate to students very well. Where I was a student once where I didn't really know what I was passionate about. I didn't know different business ideas that I wanted to do, or I had ideas. I had no idea whether they could work. I didn't know the first step. I didn't know what it was going to be like in the day to day. And I've turned out, to start a business and made it moderately successful by certain measures. So I can relate to students a lot. And one of the things I tell them is like, you don't really have to be an expert in any field. You don't have to be a coder, or you don't have to be have a master's in environmental policy, to start a business. You just have to be passionate. You've got to be patient and you've got to be willing to learn. And most importantly, you got to be willing to put in the work. There's just quite simply so much work that goes into actually starting a business. And the good news is it doesn't all fall on your shoulders at once, right? It's a more of a marathon, years long battle of solving problem. And then, once you solve one problem, you move on to the next, right? And you have to kind of be multitasking and willing to be flexible and willing to pack boxes at the same time as the same day and to go and make an investor presentation as appearing on the news, right? Do all those three things in one day and fire an employee in that same day, right? That you have to have all these different skills in your arsenal, but you don't have to have them from day one is my point, right? It's again, you kind of have to just have to have an open mind, be willing to learn, be really patient and persistent, and you can pull something off.
You nailed it. And I know that you mentioned that with your salary, actually, that you weren't even having a salary until 2 years into starting your business. So when you graduated from University of Maryland, did you go straight into Hungry Harvest, or did you have any other jobs that you were balancing in between growing that?
No, I went straight into Hungry Harvest. And I also just want to disclaim that I was really lucky. You know, a lot of people are not fortunate enough to be able to, or have the luxury of not being able to take a salary for a couple of years. I was living basically off my savings and in my parents' house while I was trying to get the business up and running. And I was really fortunate to be able to do that. Not many people can. But I started paying myself after about year two or so.
Gotcha. So I know you kind of already mentioned this, but what would you say was the most difficult part of starting your business while young?
The lack of knowledge that I had, right? It would have been so much easier to start this business had I known anything about what I was getting into, to be honest. I didn't know anything about management or people management skills. Really knew nothing about marketing. I mean, the marketing skills I learned were from a political campaign where I was an intern on a door knocking grassroots political campaign, you know, 4 summers earlier. And that's kind of what I used those same tactics, you know, going door knocking, going to events, et cetera, to gain votes. That's the same thing I did to gain our first customers. Mm. I didn't know anything about logistics either. You know, how's the produce get from the farm to the place we're going to be packing it, and then to customers' homes, about, you know, customer experience or those platforms. Facebook marketing, I paid $100 for a Facebook ad once, but didn't really do it well. Like I didn't really know much about that, or about produce longevity, right? Like what produce likes to go in the box with the other kinds of produce. Some produce likes different temperature than others. Warehousing systems, right? Learned a lot about that. So, point is, I didn't know anything about the business that I'm in. Yet was still able to do it. And the how was really, again, in that patience and persistence. One of the main things that helped me early on was having some really good mentors that helped kind of drive my motivation and inspire me to do the work that I wanted to do. I will say that I would always take, you know, for students, mentors are a really important part of actually starting a business and getting off the ground. And I will say that I had a lot of mentors that thought they could make decisions for me and had my best interest, right? And actually listened to some of them, and they gave me really bad advice at certain points.
And then you got to take it with a grain of salt.
That's right. And then I made those decisions just how they told me. And then I had to deal with the consequences of those poor decisions, and they didn't, right? They didn't have to deal with those consequences. So I would say mentors are really good. You need to learn from people that have been there and done this and really try to want to help you. But you always have to realize, like, you are you. You're the only person that is you. You're the only person that is in the place where you can make decisions, right? Mentors don't have a vested stake in your decision making, right? Maybe they want to help out of their generosity, or maybe they even have an equity stake in your business if you go that way. But again, you're going to have to live with the decisions you make. So make them with confidence, and also trust that you're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. You're going to make decisions that are, you know, I certainly did. At the beginning of the business, I made decisions that I regretted, that were huge mistakes, cost us thousands of dollars when we had, you know, only $10,000 in the bank account. I was that guy that made those decisions, and a lot of times they didn't work out, and that's all right. Again, as long as you're willing to learn write things down in a book and, grow and mature. I was only 20, how old was I? I was 21 when I started this business, and I'm 27 now. And I have matured a lot as a person, as well as the business has matured since we first started, right? And you should, if you're going to become a student entrepreneur, you should also expect that. Like when you first start, you know, you're not a fully developed adult. Like students really haven't been out in the real world to go work. And so at the same time as a lot of your friends are learning life skills in their real jobs, if they're not becoming an entrepreneur and you are becoming an entrepreneur and starting your business, you're going to learn skills five times as fast and mature much quicker. But you're also going to make mistakes that set you back in life, maybe much more than your friends that are making having a more comfortable salary job. So that's something else to be prepared for as well. I remember being really jealous of a lot of friends who got to move to these cool cities and make all this money out of college. And I was kind of stuck living at home, like trying to figure out how to deliver produce to people's houses. And it was really frustrating seeing that. But I kept faith and kept confidence in myself and my business. And I really just kept at it. And now, again, I think I made a really good choice about the decision path that I wanted to, career path that I wanted to go down, and never really looked back.
And it always works out in the end.
Yeah.
So keeping that in mind, what was the most rewarding part of starting Hungry Harvest?
It was that we were able to have impact right away. I was able to actually be on the grounds. Of course, we were signing up customers and getting those first sales were awesome, and seeing money in the bank account from our subscribers. And then we would do donation events where we'd actually hand out free food to people. That was all part of our mission. And that was really impactful to see kind of from day one, right? A lot of people don't get to see that ever in their jobs or their careers, but we were able to do that from the start of the business. And the other side of the impact is food waste. Just seeing, thousands of pounds of produce that would have gone to waste, make its way to customers was really, really cool. Seeing all these hundreds of bags going out. Now, today we have a warehouse and boxes and pallets, and we do deliveries 5 days a week. And that's still really rewarding, but actually making those first deliveries and seeing smiles in customers' faces that was because of something that I started was really cool. And the last thing I would say I was really rewarding when first starting was employing people. When you're an entrepreneur and you start a team, you have employees that are making salary, right? They're making money because of something that you started. And that, for me, to give people jobs and create a workplace where people wanted to be was really neat. I didn't realize that would be one of my favorite parts of the business, was actually managing and setting a culture and making the workplace how I wanted it to. But actually, that is my favorite part of the business, is focusing on the culture of the business and trying to make folks happy in their workplace. Those are a couple of rewarding things that I've found over the past couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of reminds me of the whole idea of like making an impact while making an income, right? So it's super powerful when those two things can come together. And that sounds like exactly what Hungry Harvest has been able to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, really neat. And that's why social entrepreneurship is so powerful, right? If you design your business well, if you engineer it properly, you don't have to have extra effort to go out and make impact, right? The more your sales increase, the more your impact increases. You don't have to sacrifice profit or resources or time to make more impact. And so that's been really cool from day one that we've had.
Yeah, exactly. And especially because I feel like when people think about social entrepreneurship and making an impact and things like that, people usually think that they have to become a nonprofit in order to do so. But you said it exactly right, that you don't have to give up profit or making an income and all of that stuff to still make a difference in the world.
That's right. Yeah, there was a point in my life where I actually was interested in the nonprofit world, and I was even interested in CSR, corporate social responsibility, actually working for a large company and working on the kind of their give back team. But I realized that system is kind of flawed, right? So say Coca-Cola, right? They do some incredible work in Africa, bringing fresh drinking water and building wells in rural villages that otherwise don't have them, right? But if you think about it, like, they're doing that great work, and you got to commend them for it. What's their core mission? It's to sell more Coke. The more Coke they sell, the more profits they make, and they use some of those profits to do good work, right? But they're inherently not aligned. The more impact work they do, the less profits they make, right? You really want to align them. So the more impact you make, the more profits you make. And that's the beauty of social entrepreneurship, is you can engineer a business to be able to do that so that you're not, you know, again, sacrificing profits or resources to make impact. You can do it all with the same strategies and levers.
Yes, that's a great point. And Evan, what do you think led to your success?
A lot of luck. luck and hard work. So I'm half kidding about luck. I think we have been very lucky. And again, that, you know, I said this earlier about kind of the timing of the business, how the gig economy was taking off and like digital tools were becoming more widely available. And like, I don't think with my lack of knowledge and capital starting out, I don't think I would have been able to start this business in 2006 and have as much success as we've had just starting in 2014 and where we are in 2020. So I do think we've been lucky, and we've certainly been lucky with the whole Shark Tank thing that we were on about 4 years ago or so, that really helped explode our business. But I would say, you know, really focusing on two things at once has helped our success. There have been a lot of things, and I don't think we have time to go into all the different things that have helped bring about our success. But I'd say focusing on the big picture of like, asking yourself the tough question: what is the company you want to create? Who are the company you want to be defined as? When people hear about your company, whether it's a customer, whether it's a member of the community, whether it's an investor, like, what do you want their first reaction to be? And thinking about these questions, you know, 5-10 years down the road, and that helping guide your vision of like, how do you design things today? That has been crucial. We've gone through a lot of really, really hard working sessions about that, where we don't have all the answers about like the exact vision of the company, and we have to change it, you know, a little bit to, make it reasonable and workable. But that has been a pretty important part of our success, about, you know, doing that every few months and making sure we're on that line. And then the second thing is focusing on the details. When I first started, I thought my job was to focus on the vision and get press for the company and get investors. And while that's certainly part of my job, the other part is equally as important, which is focusing on the details of like, what is the customer's experience? Like, you know, how is our box actually composed? What is the packaging? What are the packaging materials? How are we paying our drivers? What is our cost per acquisition on Facebook versus events? All these different metrics and drivers of growth and of costs in the business are also the CEO's responsibility, right? If something's off, you gotta put yourself into the swirl and really help try and problem solve, right? In one of our markets right now, we're having a few more logistics issues than normal. And so I start, just to give you an example, I put a meeting together. You know, typically this would be the director of logistics job, but since this is an atypical instance, I put a meeting together between myself, the director of logistics, our VP of finance, and some others to kind of kickstart this, right? And at the same time, I'm talking to investors. I'm trying to figure out how to scale the business and get more actual warehouse space. I'm talking to potential employees about how to hire them. So I'm working on both the big picture and the very fine details of how we're doing things at the same time. And you have to be prepared to do both. I really disliked a piece of advice that I got in the beginning, which is like, you know, divide up, make sure you can focus on the big vision and somebody else can focus on the small details. Actually, as a CEO, you got to focus on both. And if somebody tells you not to, or that you're doing too many things at once, they're probably not the giving you the best advice, right? Mm-hmm. We certainly have, you know, we've got 12 department heads of various departments, and we've got 80 people, and a lot of people that do the work can actually focus on the details, right? So I'm not saying you have to do everything at once. But if there is something that is going wrong that needs your expertise, you have to be willing to dive in and take many hours out of your work week to actually help fix those things. It does a couple things. One, it helps, you know, bring another problem-solving person into the mix. You know, again, typically our director of logistics would be solving this particular problem, but with a team of people, it's always easier to problem solve. The second thing is for culture. You know, it's important that people that are actually doing the work every day see that the CEO, myself, is involved, you know, cares about all of these different things that are happening in the business, and cares so much that I'm willing to, you know, put in the work and actually problem solve and dive into the details, roll my sleeves up and do it, you know, not just once or twice, but every single day, being willing to roll up your sleeves as at the same time as working on the big picture stuff that, you know, the CEOs are always put on a pedestal for. Right. For losing money and getting press and accolades and all that stuff is fun. But again, that's only part of your job. So I just want to make that really clear for any aspiring entrepreneurs is like, make sure that you're doing both parts of your job equally. You're focused on the vision and work on the details.
Yes, I think you're exactly right, especially because that's one thing that a lot of people tend to struggle with is they think, or they focus more on that big picture and that overall goal of where they see themselves in the next year, 5 years, 10 years, that they tend to neglect the little things, but it's often the little things in the business that's what keeps the business going and therefore growing. And so by ignoring those, that can end up leading to mistakes, failures, and a decline.
Yeah. I'll give you a kind of a real world example of that, right? So we've always wanted to be a brand that's associated with, you know, building a holistic food system, a more efficient food system, reducing waste, allowing customers to order, eat very easily, and allowing them to be engaged with our vision, and, you know, giving back to those in need, you know, with free or reduced cost boxes, right? And that has always been the vision for, like, you know, that we want to set out to be, you know, one of the biggest companies that does that, or the only company that does that in the next 5 to 10 years. As we grew, we realized, like, the competitive advantage of what makes that happen is that we're actually a logistics company. What we do best is we move produce from one place to the other. From the farm, we assemble it really efficiently into boxes, and we move it really efficiently to people's homes via our own, you know, network of independent contractors who use their own vehicles to actually make those deliveries. And that's our competitive advantage. It's what makes the whole system work. And there are a lot of details that go into the logistics of, you know, buying produce, how to talk to vendors, how to get the best price, where to buy from in the, you know, during various times of the year, to what are the best freight lines to get it actually to your warehouse, to actually packing and inventorying and quality checking and checking things off on the right pallet. And storing produce and actually managing a warehouse to managing the kind of deliveries, delivery routes, and how do you, you know, pay drivers, how do you recruit them, how do you manage them? All of those different things lead to our supply chain, which again is our competitive advantage and allows us to, you know, succeed and thrive as a business. That leads us towards our vision, right? So you talk about the vision, the actual work that goes into it is on the supply chain, all those details. And that we figured out kind of over time. But again, it's just important not to skip past any detail in your business, because it ultimately could lead to a lot more success.
You're absolutely right. And if there was one thing you wish you did differently, or something you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
There are a lot of things I wish I knew when I was starting out. I wish that I had found various softwares that we're using now that make the business much easier to do, rather than starting out with only kind of one piece of software that only half worked. And we kind of got locked into that piece of software for a very long time, a lot longer than we had anticipated, and actually cost us a lot of business and slowed the growth a little bit more on our customer relationship management system. I underestimated how much technology can impact a produce business at first. I said, hey, we're a logistics company. We're trying to move produce from one place to the other in the most efficient way possible. And technology is part of that, but it's not the main component. And I would say today it's probably the main component of what we do, is utilizing technology to make ourselves much better, much faster, much improved customer experience from when we first started. And again, I'm under the impression that it does not take a master or an expert in a certain field to start a business. You don't have to be a technologist to start a technology company. You don't have to be an expert in the produce field to start a produce company. In this case, I wish we had had a technologist on the team from day one to help us advise. And I think we would have been a much bigger company than we are today, to be completely honest, if we had invested in the right technologies moving forward. The second is kind of the value of certain positions that really changed my trajectory as like what I do on a day-to-day basis. So about 2 years ago, I hired a director of HR and a director of finance. And before that, for the first 3 or 4 years of the company, I was doing all the finance and I was doing all the HR. And that burden was actually really cumbersome for me to do other things in my job, including focusing on a lot of the details and focusing on the business model and strategy and our long-term goals, as well as kind of how we were set up and how we were running. I would have hired, had I known how helpful those two positions would be and those two people are to the operation, I would have hired them actually much earlier, not from day one, but maybe year two of the business to start out. As a CEO, your director of HR and director of finance are your best friends, right? You work hand in hand with them, and they will work on a lot of problems that you don't have the bandwidth to do, or if you do have bandwidth, you're giving up working on something else. There's a lot of things I would have done differently, but I would say don't underestimate how important having an HR person on your team is, and the same with finance person. And also don't underestimate how much technology can help your business, whether your business is in retail sales or in something that's not necessarily technology focused or is technology focused.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those are two great ones that you listed, and especially the delegation one, because that is something that people tend to struggle with a lot, is when to delegate and how to delegate and who to delegate. So it can be really difficult trying to navigate those three different things. But one of the things that I always say is that in order to make more money, you have to spend money. So by hiring someone to take on other aspects of the business, you're therefore opening up way more time within your schedule. And time is money, of course. As cliche as it may sound, it's right. True. And so you're now having so many more hours, not only each week, but also each month, to focus on the parts of the business that where you're really the most valuable, and letting other people kind of take the reins. So I think it's a great lesson to kind of share with others, is that being able to delegate when needed and when appropriate can do so much for propelling your business forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And that also speaks to finding the right people on your team. I can talk for hours about how to find the right person and culture fit and what to look for. But it took 5 months to find each of those positions, right? 5 months is a long time to be doing interviews and final rounds. And, it's a lot of work, and it was so worth it we had actually a couple people that we made offers to in those positions that were not, that some people on the team rejected and said like, hey, I don't think these are the right fits. And maybe it was only one person out of five or one person out of six people that, made the final interviews that rejected those people. But I'm glad they did, right? Because when we found the candidates that ultimately unanimously passed, they've turned out to be incredibly successful at their jobs and very popular in the company and doing their jobs really, really well. It's important to wait. It's always better to wait to find the best candidate rather than rushing to find a mediocre one just to get somebody in the door. We've learned our lesson there many, many times where we've rushed to find a mediocre candidate. We've spent a lot of hours, a lot of money on them, seen poor performance, and then you have to terminate them, which then is just a huge setback in a lot of different ways. It's demoralizing for them, demoralizing for the team. It wastes a lot of money. It wastes a lot of time. And even though it was the right decision, you could have avoided this all by waiting another month or two, or putting in an extra month or two of work to try and find the best candidate instead of a mediocre one.
Yeah, Absolutely. And going off of that, why do you think it's so important for individuals to start a business at a young age?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's the least risky time of your career. So I won't speak for everybody, but most college grads, you know, don't have a mortgage, right? They don't have a lot of payments. Some of them have student debt, but you don't have really, you might not, you know, most people don't have a family to support yet. And have the flexibility to be able to live in various places. When you're that young, right, you don't have, you know, when you're like 40 or 50 years old, you've got a mortgage, you've got a family to support. Quitting your job and starting a business is actually much more risky because, you know, how long can you go without making a salary, right? That should be one of the first questions you ask yourself when you're considering starting a business. Can you live at home or with friends, or how do you minimize your expenses while you're getting off the ground? Because it is going to take time before you can actually pay yourself. So I think it's a good time to start a business right out of college or in college, because again, you have kind of the least expenses of your life typically at that early age. You know, I don't think there's ever a bad time to start a business, to be honest. You know, there are plenty of terrific 65-year-old entrepreneurs that do really, really well and work into their, you know, their 80s, right? Because they love it so much. And there are also great, you know, 16-year-old entrepreneurs that do really well. So it's, you know, it depends on kind of what your level of risk you want to take, but there's never a better time to start a business than, you know, when you're actually in school or when you're a student, in my opinion.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's one thing that a lot of people said to me as well, was that they were like, by starting your business now — I was 19, I just started my sophomore year of college — they said, by starting your business now, if it doesn't work out, then it's almost like it's okay, and that it almost never happened, because by the time you graduate, you still have the opportunity to move into another career or get a 9-to-5 with someone else. And it's almost right, like you didn't really face the repercussions compared to if you're older and have those different responsibilities like kids and mortgages and other bills that you really need to be focusing on. So I absolutely agree that just not really having those other almost things, I don't want to say weighing you down, but other things that you're kind of responsible for as you are when you're older.
Yeah, exactly. I forgot what I was going to say, but I think you're going to — oh, that's what I was going to say. When you do your business does fail, right? And you do go and get it like a 9-to-5. Actually, your probability of getting a good job or getting the job that you want are much higher if you actually have in your resume that you started a business, even if it failed, because that will tell a lot of employers that you're really proactive, you're a good problem solver, you're willing to take risks, you're willing to go where other people aren't. And I think that is really good story to tell in an interview, and a lot of employers search for you know, previous entrepreneurs. Nobody's going to judge you for failing, right? Especially future employers. And if anything, they're going to judge that with a degree of positivity and say like, hey, you did something by yourself, and that's not something that everybody does, and you've been proactive about it, and you know, we'd like to bring you on, right? A lot of times I've heard that from a lot of people that have started businesses, failed, and then got a 9-to-5, is that they had a much easier time actually finding a job that they really wanted.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. Evan, you have shared so many pieces of advice here that I know our listeners will really benefit from listening to and adapting and implementing in their own businesses. But if you were to leave one last piece of advice for someone who is just starting a business, what would it be?
Yeah, I would say don't give up. And I know that's very cliche, but I'll give you a couple examples of times that I almost gave up the business. We were very close to a couple times. We had $50,000 of payroll, and we only had, in 2 weeks, and we only had $20,000 in the bank, and we had to solve through that. And I was about ready to call it quits two times for that. And another time I was about ready to call it quits after I split up with a co-founder. And, you know, it was very ugly split. And, we were only five people at the time, and two of our key employees left because of a dispute about culture. And I was very close to saying, like, this isn't worth it. It would be much easier to, and that was at the time when I wasn't even making income. I was like, might as well go get a job. That would be much easier and I'd be making more money, right? But I'm glad I didn't. And, my dad and my mom were very integral in convincing me to keep going with the business, and some mentors as well. And I ultimately told myself, I ultimately came to the following conclusion about inspiration, about why I wanted to keep going. And I want to share this with the listeners, because I heard this actually from a sermon from my rabbi. And it was so inspiring that I've kept it with me to this day. And again, is one of the reasons why I didn't give up. So I realized that I'm really inspired actually by mortality, right? The fact that we have one life to live. You only get one shot at this. And I wanted to try and make as much impact as I possibly could during that time. And so when I heard that, when I was like 12 or 13 and wanted to become an entrepreneur, I really didn't know what being an entrepreneur was going to be like. I didn't know that I was going to have major cash flow issues, or have ugly split ups with co-founders, or not really know what I'm doing, or make all these different mistakes. And so it got really, really overwhelming at various times, until I reminded myself that I was like, I signed up for this to make an impact. These mistakes that I'm making, that are on my plate right now, are hurdles that I need to overcome in the pursuit of making something that's going to leave the planet better than when I first found it, which is why I first started this business. And having that one shot at life, like, I want to make sure that I'm, giving my dreams an adequate chance to succeed, despite how painful it became. And it was really, really painful. The most pain I've ever had in my life, emotionally speaking, mentally speaking, from various problems that we've had in this business. And I fought through it with that mentality of like, listen, this is painful, but it's necessary in the pursuit of, again, giving my dreams a fair shot at succeeding. And it did actually work out in the end, that I was able to work through those problems, as massive as they might have seemed in the day to day and during the weeks and months I was going through those different things. I was close to giving up, but I never actually did pull that trigger. And I'm really glad I didn't, because again, it's about making impacts on this planet and doing something you really want to do. And even if that is not present in your day to day, and you're having a really tough time with your various problems in your business, and they're worse than you anticipate, it's about the long picture, right? It's about the life lessons you're going to be learning, and the life and the impact you're making over your career and your course of your life. So that's kind of the last thing I'll leave to our listeners is make sure you're giving your dreams an adequate shot before you give up.
And I think it's an important thing to remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, Evan, this has been such an awesome interview, and I know that our listeners will have so much value in being able to listen to it and implement the advice that you give. And now I'd love if you could share where our listeners can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further and ask any questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Just shoot an email to family@hungryharvest.net. Our website is hungryharvest.net. If you ever want to connect or find me on LinkedIn as well, it's just Evan Lutz. You can look me up there and connect with me. Happy to chat over there, that medium. But yeah, I appreciate anybody reaching out. Happy to help anybody if you guys have any questions.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Evan, for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.